Hi, this is Hermann Z, German Rebbe, former Scorpion drummer. You're listening to the Classic Rock and Metal Podcast.
Yes, we're back as promised and stand by for a fascinating and unmissable chat with Hermann Rehrbel, former drummer of the Scorpions.
We got an invitation. This is just before Gorbachev lost his power to go in the Kremlin. And he said to us, the biggest mistake I did, I let you guys in the country. Look what happened.
We'll be talking to softly spoken prog metalers Voivod on being joined by Metallica's bassist Jason Newsted, losing their original guitarist to cancer, and what Kerrang thought of them in the 80s.
You mean when they said we were the worst band on earth? We thought it was absolutely great. We were like, yeah, we're badass, we're worse than Venom.
And after Metal Legends Accept blasted back onto the scene with a new album, I had to compliment guitarist Wolf Hoffmann on his youthful glow. Looking at the cover of Kerrang! Issue 32 from 1983 with a young fella brandishing a flying V with a clenched fist, and I have another picture taken from the London show a couple of months ago, and apart from the lack of hair, I could be looking at the same picture.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, maybe I'll put on a wig next time and we'll reshoot that cover and we'll see it.
We've got the usual news roundup with new releases you should know about and the relevant tour information. There's the archive rock chart, which this month is from September 1983. And there's music from everyone you just heard, plus a couple thrown in for good measure, like this one from Triumph, here's Allied Forces.
Rock tubes are on the move, starting to show.
Originally, of course, on the Allied Forces album in 1981, that particular version is part of the Greatest Hits Remixed package that was released recently, and that includes a CD of remixed classics, obviously, plus a DVD of videos and live footage from the archives. Triumph fanatics will already have it, of course, but for everyone else, I'd highly recommend it. It's a welcome addition to the collection, or indeed as an introduction to them if you've never been acquainted. It's available all over the place to buy, so Amazon, Play.com or iTunes can sort you out with that. Now, some of you may know that a version of Guns N' Roses still exists with Axl Rose singing, and a bunch of people you've probably never heard of, along for the ride. The infamous Chinese Democracy album finally came out at the end of 2008, which was fully 17 years after Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, and in many people's eyes wasn't really worth the wait. Anyway, the band have played sporadically since, supporting the album, and were booked to headline the recent Leeds and Reading festivals, followed by a UK arena tour. The interest in seeing this particular lineup seems to have been really strong, which I think to most of us who saw them back in the day comes as somewhat bemusing. Anyway, 8 years ago, they'd also headline Leeds and infamously took to the stage over 2 hours late, something that wasn't uncommon, if you recall. Anyway, this time the promoter publicly warned the band that any repeat of this would result in them literally pulling the plug. Well, guess what happened next? They started an hour late, but were given an extra half hour to play, after which the power was cut, before them being able to play Paradise City as an encore. What then followed was pure pantomime as Axl tried to sing the song through a megaphone with the crowd joining in. There was a brief sit-in by the band with Axl ranting about the promoter and claiming they wouldn't be playing at Leeds. Anyway, he must have had a change of heart because they did in fact headline Leeds. And guess what happened next? They started late again and were told at 11:20 that the show needed to end, so they just managed to play one more song. The band were later claiming that they'd been told they would be able to play for longer and it was all the promoter's fault. Anyway, following that were some truly bizarre scenes at the Dublin show on September the 1st, when the band left the stage for more than 30 minutes after a bottle was thrown. They'd started over an hour late, again, to plenty of jeers from the crowd who'd been throwing bottles, presumably to amuse themselves while they waited. Anyway, Axl had threatened to walk off after a bottle had been thrown earlier in the set and made good on his promise when another one arrived. During their absence, the house lights actually came on and the majority of the crowd reportedly left the venue, and when the band finally came back on, they actually finished the set to a very depleted and somewhat not amused crowd. Try getting on stage at the right time, fellas. Anyway, from one extreme to the other, the Scorpions have always been the definition of professionalism and a benchmark for aspiring bands all over the world. They're currently on reportedly their final world tour, but for what many call the glory years, drumming duties were handled by the charismatic and highly musical Herman Rarebell. Back in the mid-90s, a change in musical direction prompted a Rare disagreement, and Herman decided to call it a day and move on, having given 20 years to one of the world's most influential rock bands. He co-wrote many of the band's biggest hits and has experienced more than his fair share of life on and off the road. His story is now chronicled in a new audiobook called My Life as a Scorpion, and it's accompanied by a new album from his new band called Take It As It Comes. I met with him at his home in Brighton to talk all things Scorpion and beyond, starting with that infamous blackout story.
Obviously that was your idea and your lyrics, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was my idea and my lyrics. But the idea came out of real life situation. We had a gig in 1980 in July with Judas Priest and Def Leppard. Def Leppard was the opening act, we were the special guest, and Judas Priest was the headliner that night. Anyway, some guys from Judas Priest and some guys from Def Leppard were sitting in a normal hotel lobby watching some TV there, and outside I hear sirens from the police. So I look out of my window and I see Rudolph getting arrested from the police, but I didn't know why. So I came down there, obviously. He was so drunk that he fell over in one of those driveways, you know, to a supermarket, and the police probably thought he wanted to break in there. So I said, no, this is our guitar player, you know. Said, are you okay? This not happens again. So I took him in, and he walks into the hotel lobby, and he grabs a beer on one of the tables, goes to the TV, puts the beer in the TV, stuck in the movie, smoke, and he goes in the elevator and goes up and crashes, you know. So I think in the next day, couldn't remember nothing. I said, what you had is what we call blackout, complete blackout. And then I went to the table. I realized I missed a day, but I'm too weak to care anyway. Wow, okay. You got a riff? Yeah, that's how the song came.
maybe it's a bit unusual for the drummer of a rock band to have so much creative input, but a lot of people will think that maybe a lot of it was just Klaus and Rudy, but they won't realise just how many of those songs you wrote the lyrics, and some of them complete songs as well.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, let's start with the main big hit, you know, Rock You Like a Hurricane, you know. I wrote basically all the lyrics, and Rudolf wrote the music, and Klaus had great idea with the hook line. But I think, you know, when you look also at songs I wrote alone, like Another Piece of Meat or Passion Rules the Game or Falling in Love, they have made a great contribution to the band, especially in the beginning when we built the ship up. Yeah. And then later on, all the classic songs like Blackout, Dynamite, then I wrote the lyrics alone for Make It Real, then wrote the lyrics alone for Arizona, then we wrote together Now, You Give Me All I Need. I mean, endless. You know, basically, the first four albums, you find the name Rare Boy literally on every song.
I think if anyone needs to get an image of the scale of the Scorpions' appeal, they can get a vinyl copy of Worldwide Live. Open it up. And inside, you've got that insane photograph of a crowd which just goes on and on forever. Was that San Bernardino in California?
Yeah, I have it on my audiobook when you open it up.
Right.
That was in San Bernardino on the 29th of May 1983. And they're talking 400,000 people. And it is really as far as you could see. And I didn't expect so many. So I know that they had to fly us in by helicopter because we wouldn't have made it by bus or by car to go to the gig. So they said, guys, there's so many people, you wouldn't believe it, so we take the helicopter. And that's what they did. Wow. So the helicopter flew everybody over there.
And I guess when you get from 1,000 to 20 to 50,000,
yes.
400,000? I mean,
well, you saw it, you know. This picture was taken behind me for my drum kit. That's the view which I had for my kit. That's why I put it in there. Unbelievable, huh?
We remember very clearly the situation in East Germany and the Soviet Union back in the early 80s. There is a view that the Scorpions were so influential at the time that you actually helped in a small way the process of bringing people from those countries closer to the West through a love of the music. And some people might find that surprising, but I think it's been talked about on more than one occasion. And then, I mean, after there were certain key gigs that you played, and after that the wall came down, it must have been very odd to be in the centre of all of that.
Well, I think, you know, we are responsible for that down there because we played there in 88 and we're supposed to play five nights in Moscow and five nights in Leningrad, it was at the time. And we played 10 nights in Leningrad because it was very close to the 1st of May. And the authorities then, it was still communistic, they said it is too close to the first day of May working there. Maybe revolution will break loose. Because we sold out 10 nights in Leningrad. Every night, 20,000 people. It means they came from all over Russia. But anyway, a year later, we played the Moscow Music Peace Festival in August 89. In the middle of this big stadium, they put 400-600 soldiers to make sure that everything in the stadium is under control. When we played, those soldiers were throwing up their hats and singing along Blackout. As we are. It was unreal to look. And then I said, I'd seen this, and I said to myself, that's it. The days, there will be soon like us. On the 9th of November, the same year, the wall was falling down, and I see in the news Gorbachev shaking the hand of President Reagan, and Wind of Change is running back. So then, a week later, we got an invitation. This is just before Gorbachev lost his power to go in the Kremlin with the most powerful man to sit there on the table. And we went there. It was like in the movie, the red carpet, the big black limousines, you know. So we go there and we said, wow. So we sit with this guy 3 hours. And so he's very funny. So he says to us, what is heavy metal? And you go, we don't know. He goes, well, when Khrushchev took his shoe off in front of the United Nations and hammered on the table, that's heavy metal. But it shows you again that this guy has a sense of humor. And he said to us, yeah, he said, what was the biggest mistake America did? So we all know. He said, well, 1964, when they let the Beatles in, because then rock and roll started and everybody wanted freedom. He said, the biggest mistake I did, I let you guys in the country. Look what happened. And you know, yeah. He convinced that we also started the freedom thing there. And Wind of Change was the song in Eastern Europe at the time when the wall came down and everybody suddenly could come to the West. Imagine a bit tomorrow, a vote to your hometown. They'll tell you, you cannot go home tonight and see your wife or your relatives. That's exactly what they did. So suddenly it's gone. So this was a huge momentum for me to see that so close, you know.
Talk about Wind of Change and the Crazy World Tour.
It was the most successful tour because of one hit makes the difference, because it was number one in 20 countries. But what I have to say also, as nice as this is, of course, to sell 8 million copies of Crazy World, we had suddenly a different audience. We had a lot of housewives suddenly sitting the whole set with both their hands in the ears. They couldn't believe what they got there. 2 hours of hard rock. And I remember at the beginning of the tour, we played in the middle of a set, we played Still Loving You and Wind of Change. So what happened after that, the housewives suddenly got up and walked out.
No.
Because it was simply too loud for them. And the hard rockers, they said, what are they doing now? They're selling out. They play now really commercial ballad music for the commercial radio stations. So they stood away from this because they didn't want to mix with them. So this, I think, you know, as good as it was, on the other side, life-wise, it was not a good thing. Because after that, we could feel that less people came.
Right.
And you would have thought more people came.
Talking about the album, it's a really strong album.
Well, thank you very much.
And it's mostly new stuff, but a couple from the archives.
Yeah. I found in my treasure box one old version of Wipeout, which I recorded back in 1984. Everything else is new.
And a version of Rocky Like a Hurricane.
Well, I made a new version of Rocky Like a Hurricane because I felt it's time to do something new. The difference to the original one, which, by the way, cannot be touched. I wrote the lyrics, so I'm playing with my own song. But this time was just a challenge to do something new. So I wrote an extra verse to it, and I speak it. Being a big fan of Rammstein, I said, this is the thing, the direction it should go. And I said to my wife in the solo part, I said, don't play a wild saxophone solo there, like a guitar player. Take it really down, cool, chill out. Just before a storm breaks loose, the hurricane comes. And so this is the two big differences in the song.
Talking of Take It As It Comes, it's a great track, which is really going to be one for the Scorpions fans. And you're basically telling us just to chill out and live for today, yeah?
Yeah, well, I'm telling everybody to live this philosophy because I believe in it very deeply. In nowadays world, you have to take it as it comes. Otherwise, you make yourself completely crazy and you don't know what happens next anyway.
Our thanks to Herman. All the best with the record, which is out now on Dark Star Records and available online from darkstarrecords.com or hermanrebel.com. This is the title track, Take It As It Comes.
Why don't you take it easy and live your life?
Voivod are one of those bands that don't fit easily into any category, possibly because they very markedly changed styles and included different influences over the years. Perhaps their most successful period was when Jason Newsted, fresh from leaving Metallica, lent his weight, talent and financial support, resulting in a more mainstream sound and consequently a higher profile. In 2005, original guitarist Piggy lost his battle with cancer, but left finished guitar tracks from demos the band had been working on. The result was the 14 album released in 2006, and more recently Infini, which the band is currently touring to support. I spoke with founder member and drummer Away and started by asking him about the Jason Newsted era.
We met Jason in the 80s, so we stayed in touch and became good friends. In 2000, we split the band. Sometime through the year 2001, we decided to reform, but with Snake, the original vocalist. We thought about Jason as somebody who could help us in the studio and play the bass on the album, but we really didn't think about him joining the band at all. It's just after writing a bunch of tracks, he decided to join the band and help us a lot financially, because he had a label, the Chop House, and his own studio and all that. So and he, of course, brought a lot of exposure to the band, and we sort of went back to when we became a little more popular at the end of the 80s. It sort of went back to that era where we got a lot of press all of a sudden and started to do bigger shows, the Ozzfest. And he was very helpful. He was a huge Voivod fan and had a very good relationship musically with Piggy, the guitar player.
Jason plays on the Infini album, but obviously he's not touring with you.
After we finished the re-recording of Infini, his mission was done. He really wanted these two babies, 14 and Infini, to see the light of day, because he was very proud of what we had written, you know. And after that, I think that it was time for us to move to a new era for Voivod and sort of put the Piggy Jason lineup behind. And it's very, very exciting. And now we're trying to write new material, and we'll see what's going to happen with that.
Guitarist and a longtime friend back in 2005. Can you talk a little bit about that, and also how you knew what to do with the material that he'd left, the guitar parts?
At first, we really didn't know what to do. We spent the year 2004 writing and recording demos for two albums. At first, we thought maybe it'd be a double album. And then after writing, like, I think it was 23 songs for the two albums, Piggy was taken ill and unfortunately passed away. And it's only after we went through the tracks on his computer that we discovered that he had re-recorded his demo parts professionally with Pro Tools. So that's where we realized that there was something we could do with the recordings. But at first we had no idea we could do albums out of demos. You know?
Our famous Kerrang! Magazine equally famously said something not very nice about Voivod once.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, you mean when they said we were the worst band on earth? We thought it was absolutely great. Because if you're in the middle, you know, you can be the best or the worst, people will notice. But if you're sort of in between, you'll just be among all the other bands. And we were like, yeah, we're badass, we're worse than Venom, right on. We were huge Venom fans, all of us, you know, so we're like, wow, it seems like we're heavier than everybody. It seemed to so we took it as a compliment. Actually,
your early view of what the future would bring was probably quite bleak. How does 2010 look now?
I think that Snake has even more material to write about than back then. It's just insane. Every day there's a new thing on TV that makes me think that we're even more out of control than ever. You know, it's, I don't know, it's just, it doesn't seem to be getting better, but it doesn't make us pessimistic people or bitter people. We enjoy life, you know, we're pretty smiley guys. And but it is... how do you say, going awry or yeah?
If we're going to play something off Infini, what should it be?
Probably Global Warning, because we play it live. It's actually the track that we play live from Infini. All the rest is material we wrote with Blackie on the first six albums. So it would probably make sense to play Global Warning. It's also very relevant right now.
Still living out when I was dreaming.
Verbal Warning there from Infini, and the other track you heard during the piece was The Getaway off the Cators album, both released through the Nuclear Blast label and available at all good retailers as usual. Online, Infini is about £9, and Cators I've seen through Amazon for less than £4 delivered, so absolutely no excuse not to go out and buy those. Okay, spot more news. Ozzy Osbourne has been talking up the possibilities of another original Black Sabbath reunion. He's been on a few news wires saying he's been talking to Bill Ward and they've been having a chat about it. I think Geezer Butler also chimed in at one stage saying he would never say never, and it would still be great to do another classic Sabbath album. Okay, festival season is pretty much over, and Sonosphere was kind of king of the crop, really. It's a relatively new festival, Sonosphere, but it's a touring show, and this year went to 11 countries, 19 dates, and 700,000 people attended in total. It's been a pretty big thing. Over here is taking over the Nebworth Fair, which was an old venue for festivals, but Iron Maiden headlined this year, and in Europe, the big story was they got the big four of Thrash, Slayer, Metallica, Anthrax and Megadeth all playing on the same bill, and there was a big hoo-ha. They all got onto the same stage, and that show was actually broadcast into cinemas as well, and it's coming out on DVD. So Sonosphere kind of rules, has been done incredibly well because it only started, I think, last year. Now, on the subject of those guys, Anthrax are touring with Slayer and Megadeth in the US, and Anthrax, of course, back with Joey Belladonna, who's been out of the band for about 20 years, but back in for the big four Sonosphere shows and doing this tour as well, and everything seems to be going fine. Scott Ian and Charlie Benante have both been saying it's great, and Joey Belladonna like he's never been away. So all harmonious in the Anthrax camp. Lady Gaga and Kiss have been trading compliments this month. Gene Simmons had previously shown admiration for the young pop star, and having popped in to see one of their recent US shows, she was only too happy to reciprocate. She said, "You meet so many people in Hollywood who are so ungrateful for what they have, but these guys have been making music for decades and they were beyond nice. They hung out with me and my friends for 30 minutes backstage. Actually, I think you'll find that's the deluxe meet and greet package, and there's probably an invoice in the post for it. Anyway, it was a great photo opportunity, and you can go to Kiss Online .com and have a look at the scantily clad diva in high heels and caked in makeup standing right next to Lady Gaga." Okay, it's time for the Archive Rock Chart, and this month we're going all the way back to September 1983. Straight in at number 20 was Fake Friends by Joan Jett. Number 19 was Garden Party by Marillion. 18, The Kids Are Back by Twisted Sister. Number 17 was Gimme All Your Lovin' by ZZ Top. Number 16 was Shine by Motorhead. And number 15 was Nightmare from Saxon. At 14 was Iron Maiden with The Trooper. Number 13, Making Music by Diamond Head. Number 12 was Die Hard from Venom. In at number 11 was 1-2-3-4 Rock and Roll from Girl School. And at number 10, The Sun Goes Down by Thin Lizzy. Number 9 was Holy Diver from Dio. At 8 was Stay On Top from Uriah Heep. Number 7, Don't Cry by Asia. Number 6 was Street of Dreams from Rainbow. Number 5, Rock of Ages, Def Leppard. Number 4, Twisted Sister again with You Can't Stop Rock and Roll. Number 3 was Big Log from Robert Plant. Number 2 was Guilty of Love from Whitesnake. And number 1 was this from Y&T, It's Mean Streak. Oh! Okay, talking about YNT, they're just about to tour over here in the UK supporting the new Face Melta album. And unfortunately, bassist Phil Kennamore has been recently diagnosed with metastatic cancer. He's had trouble for a while and had some tests and unfortunately came back with the bad news a little while ago. He's back in the US. He's going to have some treatment. He's having a hip replacement and some back surgery, and he's just about to start some pretty aggressive chemotherapy. But the prognosis is good. Hopefully he's going to be up and about and out of there relatively soon, and hoping to be back on the road with YNT as soon as possible. So you can go to menichetti.com, which is the YNT website, sign up to the forum. Phil is on there every day, I understand, reading messages, of which there are several hundred or thousand by now, and they're keeping him in good spirits. So if you've got a minute, might be worth doing that. There's a link to that in the show notes as well. Now, Accept last released a studio album back in 1996. Since then, original frontman Udo Dirkschneider has embarked on his solo career, and despite a brief reunion stint in 2005, he and the other band members have gone their separate ways. Guitarist Wolf Hoffmann became a professional photographer in the US, and all things Accept were generally laid to rest. Until mid-2009, when he and original bass player Peter Bolt decided to give it another go. This time, though, Udo said no, and the band did the unthinkable, recruited a new singer and went on without him. Enter Mark Tornillo, former frontman with TT Quick, who was drafted in, and since then they've done more than raise a few eyebrows. They set to work on a new album, Blood of the Nations, which has just been released in the US and Europe through Nuclear Blast, and the response has been incredible. It is an unbelievably strong record, but the audience for it seems to have surprised everyone. The band recently headlined the Sonosphere Festival in Istanbul, having played to a staggering 450,000 people in the lead-up to the album's release. I spoke with Wolf Hoffmann from his home in Nashville and asked if this truly is a new start for the old Accept, with a new singer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to make a good album, and then people have to decide for themselves whether it's accepted as they like it or not, you know, and I think the answer is already out there at this point. We have long-term plans, man. We really want to do this, not for just 1 year or 2 years. We really want to make another record after this, and we really want to start a new chapter of all this and see how far we can take it.
It's incredibly heavy sound, and it seems to have come
right. And yeah, you know, we really wanted to write songs that that would sort of be a continuation of those times of Balls to the Wall and Breaker and Restless and Wild, and you know, and a lot of times we sat there in the studio, and when we had to decide on something, we kind of asked ourselves, well, what would we have done back then? Which is it sounds pretty easy in concept, but a lot of bands are struggling with that because, you know, here we are 30 years later, and so much has changed, and I think, you know, it's never very, very easy to do something like you would have done it when you were 20 years old, you know, but somehow we pulled it off, I think.
Quite a few of the bands from the 80s kept going through those really lean years, some of them, you know, with mixed success. Do you think you needed to go away to come back stronger?
I think it helped me personally tremendously, because I was actually sort of burned out and sick and tired of it when I quit in the mid-90s, because, you know, I just basically had enough, and I didn't see where this whole thing was going, and, you know, I did something else in my life, and after such a long break, we're all really anxious to come back. We've got a lot of energy inside us and a lot of ideas build up, and, you know, it just, I think you can hear this on this album. It's just full of energy and full of youthfulness, if you want, even in our old age.
Well, yeah, but then having said that, Wolf, I have to say, I'm looking at Kerrang issue, I don't know what it is, issue number 32 from February 1983, and there's a young chap on there with a white flying V, and I'm also looking at a Power Play magazine from about 2 months ago, and apart from the hair, I'm looking at the same guy.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, maybe I'll put on a wig next time and we'll reshoot that cover and we'll see. Also, you have to realize this time away from the music business gives you a rare opportunity to really reevaluate your life and what it's all about and stuff. And I think Peter and myself, we both came to the conclusion that, man, there's not a whole lot of things in life that are as good as being on stage with Accept. And we've been missing it. So now that we have a chance to do it again with Mark, I mean, we're all over it.
I'm not a bit surprised. I mean, I guess doing those shows, a couple of headline ones recently over the summer, with a good number of people there, that must have felt pretty good.
Yeah, it felt awesome. Absolutely. It was overwhelming. I mean, honestly, I'm so grateful that people haven't forgotten about us and they still come to the shows. And there seems to be even a renewed interest in Accept now, which is totally surprising. There's almost a new generation that they were either not born or they're babies when we quit, you know. So they're maybe the teenagers now that never had a chance to see us live or buy one of our records. So it seems like a lot of those people now rediscover Accept.
We've talked with other bands about the internet and what it's done for them. I mean, obviously, the industry will tell you that it's been the death of it, and in some ways it has. But overall, for what you're doing now and certainly connecting with the fan base, do you think overall it's been good or bad?
I think it's probably better. But I mean, on one hand, like you said, you don't have the record sales anymore. But on the other hand, you've got this incredible marketing tool with the internet that if when you know how to use it right, then it can be incredibly helpful. Mm. You know, just now when the record came out, for instance, we did a 24-hour news marathon with people online everywhere. And, you know, there was this whole thing that you could never have done. They were so direct and I mean immediate connection with the fans. You could never have done anything like that in the old days. So there's a lot of good things to be said for the internet. Of course, it can backfire terribly too. I mean, you know, if you got something terrible out there, everybody will hear it. But at the same time, if you got something good to promote, then it works really well, you know.
Do you listen to any of the newer bands?
You know, I still kind of like the same old heroes and the masters that I admired when I was a teenager, which is, you know, AC/DC and Judas Priest and Deep Purple and, you know, all that hopelessly old school stuff, you know. And I'm still that same way today, honestly.
Now, you and the Scorpions have been around the track a couple of times together, and we were talking with Herman Rarebell earlier on about them packing it in, and of course you guys are just kicking it all off again. So any thoughts on that?
It's kind of funny, coincidental, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of the two Germans, one of them is leaving the scene and we're coming back. Just pure coincidence, but kind of funny. I mean, I like the Scorpions. I love them. I just went to see them last weekend, and you know, they're good friends, and I admire them with no end. I mean, they kept going all these years, and I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit. And if they say they want to pack it in within a few years, then you know, they really deserve that. And I know a lot of people are critical whether they're really going to do it, and they don't believe it. But hey, man, I believe it. If they say it, I mean, more power to them.
Our thanks to Wolf for taking the time to chat. Let's hear some of that new album then. This track has so far amassed an astonishing 300,000 plus plays on YouTube and is in the same mold as all those classic 80s anthems. With a very warm welcome back to Accept, this is Teutonic Terror.
Saddle the horses off with the hand.
Dave Mustaine, obviously Megadeth's leader and former member of Metallica, has a new book out at the end of this month, A Life in Metal. It's been out in the States for a while and has actually been on the bestsellers list. He's done a book tour to promote it. It's been very, very popular, and I think a lot of this off the back of the big four thrash shows at Sonisphere and quite a widely publicised kiss and make up type of session, not in a bad way, but genuinely between him and James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich of Metallica, seems that those old wounds might finally be healed, and it looks like quite an interesting read actually. New releases you should be aware of: obviously Iron Maiden has The Final Frontier, their new album, which is out and topping the charts all over the place. Black Label Society has Order of the Black. New from Apocalyptica is Seventh Symphony. Richie Blackmore's Blackmore's Night has Secret Voyage. Joe Satriano's got a new one, Black Holes and Wormhole Wizards. Robert Plant's new one is Band of Joy. And the sort of supergroup with Glenn Hughes, Derek Sherinian, Jason Bonham and Joe Bonamassa, which is Black Country Communion, has their debut album out. Well worth a listen. Okay, time for some more new music now, and Terry Brock has been around for a good 30 years. He's fronted Giant and Strangeways. He's also worked with Kansas and he's had a couple of solo albums out, the second of which has just been released through Frontiers. It's called Diamond Blue and this is the title track. Okay, that just about wraps it up this month. Before we go, though, we had a competition last time and we asked what Ace Frehley's nickname was when he was with Kiss. The answer, of course, was Space Ace, and our winners are Neil Thompson, David Graham and Susie Skinner. Well done to them. They all win signed copies of Ace's Outer Space CD single. Big thanks to everybody who contributed this month, and special thanks go to Mark Striegel from the Talking Metal podcast over in the US for his help, advice and support. They've been going for 5 years and are well into over 300 episodes, believe it or not, and you can find them at talkingmetal.com. For those of you that heard this month's show teaser and were expecting to hear from Andy Bolton of our very own Tokyo Blade, apologies, but you'll be hearing that another time. We've been invited to attend the final recording sessions for their new album, and so we'll be including audio from that. It'll be a bigger feature and well worth waiting for, I promise. So, hope you enjoyed this one. We'll be back on the first Monday in October for the next one. Until then, have a good month.